This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
I believe in societal norms.
The clock struck six. It meant one thing.
I said already, Don, it was embarrassing. Don't scream
at me
on the show.
Don't defend
him. It was horrifying.
Now, from the ESPN New York News Desk, here's Andrew Gundling.
You couldn't possibly understand the hurt.
And tonight's ENN is brought to you by Deep Eddy Vodka. Please day drink responsibly. Andrew Gundling in for Peter Rosenberg. Peter will be back this Friday at the Beach Bash at Bar A in Belmar, New Jersey. Let's see. We start out tonight's ENN by saying hello to Michael.
Couple of aliens I saw in Roswell. Little green guys. Sad.
That's Donald Trump revealing to the world that aliens are real. And we say hello to Don.
Das Beakers. Docs Breakers sports cards.
What is that? What happened?
Yesterday. I guess that was yesterday.
It couldn't have been. I didn't hear it.
Yeah. During one of my reads, either Monday or yesterday.
Okay. It's cute.
All right. We're starting in tonight. Quick update on the Mets and Giants. Still 1-0 San Francisco as they head now to the bottom of the eighth. Mets just three hits today. It's not what you want.
Have they had people in scoring position?
Just in the first inning, I think. The first inning, they had runners at the corners with one out and hitting to a double play. And I think that's been it. They only have three hits, and I think two of them came in the first inning.
So the tweet really worked out.
Well, and here's the scary thing. DeSclafani, the starting pitcher who's having a great year for San Francisco, pulled something covering first base and left with one out in the second. So the bullpen of the San Francisco Giants has been asked to get 23 outs holding a one-run lead, and they've got 20 of them. And I think the Mets went down on like four pitches in the eighth.
Yeah, the Mets have left five on base. They're 0 for 2, I believe, with runners in scoring position.
And yeah, and that 0 for 2 is in the top of the first.
Yep.
Which makes it almost completing six games in which they've gone 4 for 43 with runners in scoring position.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Also, of course, Yankees in action tonight against the Red Sox going for the sweep. We spoke a little bit about Luke Voit's comments from last night saying that he deserves to be playing. Aaron Boone responded earlier today. Here's his comments.
Luke and I have talked. The bottom line is hopefully we continue to get guys back and we remain, healthy. The bottom line is Luke's going to play a big role on this team moving forward. And I think you can all kind of look at it and envision him in the lineup a lot, where as you're moving guys around, giving a guy a day here or there, and Luke factors into that a ton. So, this is about, us. We got 40-something games left. We understand how important these days are and where we are in the season. And, this is all about us as a team right now and trying to get as many wins as we can. And I feel like Luke's going to play a big role in that.
Yeah. We joke around with Chris, but I'm surprised that that's his stance that, what's the harm? It has the potential to have great harm. There's no need for it. Again, if the fans through voting, right, on social media actually made out the lineup, then fine, go for it. Present your case to the fans. But what are you doing?
Well, let me translate.
That's a situation to have that's a conversation you have with Aaron Boone.
Well, and I should have brought this up with Chris, and I apologize for it. But when you say you have no problem with it, what you're saying is I have no problem with him being a non-team player. Because there's no way you can tell me he's a team player and do that. You do it privately. And Chris's answer was, well, what if he did do it privately? All right, if you're making it public, that's a me move. That does not help the team. So if you think it's okay for him to pull a me move when the team's playing their best baseball of the season but still work to be done, then I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, again, listen, I like Luke, okay? So this isn't about me, attacking Luke. It's just that's not a good play. That, especially in a very, very buttoned-up organization, not a good play. If I could figure out the end game, Don, then okay, you got me. I can't figure out the end game. Doesn't make sense. There is no end game.
You know Boone a little bit, Michael. Does he strike you as somebody who would have heard that and been angry about it, or kind of just, whatever, I'll talk to Luke and we'll smooth this over?
I would say that he was probably chapped, but not outrageously upset, but he was not thrilled with it. and he probably relayed that to Luke, but did it in his own way, and that's why he's so good at handling the stuff. He's not going to go nuts about it, but you know, he probably joked around. What are you doing? I mean, the fans aren't making out the lineup. Again, airing your dirty laundry is not a smart play. Again, in a very conservative organization.
Yeah. Guys, a little bit of football. This flew under the radar a little yesterday, given some of the other news that came out of the Mara-Gettleman press conferences. But John Mara, who's a member of the league's competition committee, he was asked about their decision to really enforce taunting penalties this year. We've already started to see it in preseason games, and some of the calls have been kind of embarrassing, given what we're used to seeing. Here's what John Mara had to say about that.
The taunting emphasis, what were the conversations about that among you guys?
Yeah, I mean, that's something we discuss every year in the competition committee. We get kind of sick and tired of the taunting that does go on from time to time on the field. We've tried to balance the sportsmanship with allowing the players to have fun, and there's always a fine line there, but none of us like to see that, and it's just a question of whether you can have rules that can be enforced and without taking the fun out of the game too. But nobody wants to see a player taunting another player. I know I certainly don't, and I think the rest of the members of the competition committee feel the same way too.
Alvin Kamara had a tweet mocking those comments. Tyrann Mathieu did as well. His said, "So shut up and play." Got it. He deleted that tweet later. What do you think about the NFL cracking down on taunting to an even higher level than what they've done in the past?
But here's what I don't get. All right, so you don't want taunting, right? So what's the but you're allowing those stupid celebrations in the end zone. Isn't that taunting the other team? You might not be right in their face, but I saw a flag thrown. A running back. I don't remember.
Are you talking
team.
About the Colts game?
Yes.
That's the one that I keep thinking about
dragging
too.
I don't know if you saw this, Don. Dragging five tacklers for about 9 yards. He gets up and he's like, like pumping his fist. Well, not even toward the players. They threw a flag. Come on, man. So you got to decide what you want to be. You're going to let them celebrate like lunatics in the end zone, all those choreographed things, but then you're going to stop taunting? That's taunting. The celebrations are taunting.
But they defined it is when you kind of single out a player, you know, stand over a player, spike the ball on a player's face, that's taunting. Obviously, if you do the Lambeau leap, if you want to spike the ball, or if players want to get together like what happens after turnovers and they run to the end zone and they pose for the picture, I get where you think that's taunting, but they've said those celebrations are okay. But when you get in somebody's face, now it didn't sound like that player got in anybody's face, so they screwed that up. But they were very clear on what taunting is and isn't. So for players to say, all right, just shut up and play, they're not saying that. They're not taking away your ability to be enthusiastic and to celebrate. But when you get in somebody's face, or if you, you know, do the cutthroat sign, or you grab private areas of your body, you should be flagged.
But those are things that are called already. If they're emphasizing it even further, then it means they're going to take it up a notch, which I don't think – well, who's asking for that?
No, but you've got to define it then, because I was fine with the way they defined it. But are they because, hey, let's face it, you know, if you're going to get rid of celebratory stuff, well, then you got to get rid of the Lambeau leap. But, well, you're not going to do that because it's the Green Bay Packers and fans love it. So – I thought they had a great line of demarcation. Don't single out a player and humiliate a player, but still have your celebration. So I need them to redefine it then. And if they redefine it to where they're going to take some of those things away, then I can understand the players being upset.
Listen, I'm not going to sit here and be a phony. I hate the choreographed celebrations. I think it's stupid. And I think that is taunting. To pick and choose now, I don't like the taunting either. But if that's the flag they're going to throw on what that guy did in the Colts game, that's disgraceful.
But you do
there
have
is an energy to making a play like
I know,
that.
But you do have to come up with something, because if you just allow them to do anything, then you get the whole incident that happened in Dallas with Terrell Owens standing on the star and ended up causing a fight, or you get the what was that Sam Horn from the New Orleans Saints? Joe Horn, excuse me, that pulled out the Sharpie and signed like if. You gotta govern it somehow, Michael. Because if you let them do it, then it's gonna get crazy.
But like you said, they had like
right.
You,
exactly.
You can't, we know you can't spike a ball in someone's face. If a guy's down on the ground, you can't stand over him and yell in his like. We know those things. I don't know why they felt like they needed to take it up to another level.
Because college is a joke.
Yeah. Well, that's what I hope is that maybe this will just be a thing that's emphasized in the preseason. They're trying to send a message, because if you get to the playoffs where emotion goes up to an even higher level than what it's at during the regular season, and guys have to be given leeway there. It would be such a shame to see 15-yard penalty flags thrown in crucial moments of playoff games because guys are amped up. I hope that's not what happens here. The Jets, while we're on football, had a joint practice with the Packers today. Don, you brought it to my attention during our pre-show meeting that Damian Woody, he had sent out a tweet that kind of raised eyebrows. He said, so following the Jets beat, the world is crashing in Lambeau. So then I checked some of what was being said from Jets reporters about the practice. Brian Costello had sort of a running commentary going. He said, Jets offensive line having a rough day. Practice is over. You could definitely tell which team was 13-3 last year and which one was 2-14. Zach Wilson was sacked 7 times unofficially. He was 12 of 23, and 2 incompletions were drops. You make anything of that?
I don't think anything should be made of that. I don't think anything should be made of preseason games. They're just getting in shape. Actually keep stats on a scrimmage. It's amazing to me what it's become. But since everybody has Twitter and every reporter has to have 24-hour information, I guess they're putting everything out there. But Zach Wilson struggle. Oh, wow. Okay. To what end? How much of their A package did they run? How much of the A package did the Packers run? I need to know all that information. How serious were they? How legitimate were the hits? I have no idea.
But what's bothering me, though, Andrew, is that it feels like the scrimmages are going to be more impactful and have more information than the actual preseason game.
Yeah, that could be. If I were a Jet fan, I mostly agree with you that I don't think you can read too deeply into this, especially with Zach Wilson. Like, he actually had a great comment last week where he talked about using this as kind of the moment to learn what he can and can't do. Like pitchers in spring training that are testing certain pitches and things like that. The one thing that I would be a little worried about is it sounds like the offensive line is not having a good training camp and preseason. And, you know, Wilson, he can test out certain throws. Okay, can I fit a ball into this window? But the offensive line, I don't know, maybe I'm being too simplistic with it, but it's kind of just it sort of is what it is. Can you block the guy in front of you? There's not much to really test, I don't think. So that would worry me a little bit. Phil Simms was on with Greeny earlier today. He was actually talking about his scouting report of Zach Wilson.
What I saw at BYU, the same talent, the same arm. I didn't get to see him move around as much as I would like, but when he did move in practice, as I said in the article you probably read, that wow. I mean, he makes those kind of throws. He makes it look easy. Of course, it's going to be a big learning curve, young football team. And I think of all the rookies coming into the draft this year at quarterback, he absolutely, no question, has the toughest job of the five that were drafted.
That's Phil Simms on with Greeny.
So Phil will go on with Greeny, Don, but he won't come on with us.
I thought the same thing.
I flush it.
Grow up. All right.
Also out at practice today, you could see Zach Wilson really having an extended conversation with Aaron Rodgers, picking his brain. Wilson spoke afterwards about that conversation, interaction with Rodgers.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's, you know, I said it out here, you know, we're all technically at the same level now. We're all in the NFL, but it's like we all still kind of like, you know what, that's Aaron Rodgers. You know, it's kind of crazy, you know, but it's still, you know, a great tool for us just to be able to learn from him and kind of see what he's doing.
Yeah, so Zach Wilson learning from one of the greats. Guys, in Chicago, potentially awkward situation brewing with the Bears there. Justin Fields has reportedly been having a great camp. Future of the team. Fans are excited about him, high draft pick, but Andy Dalton is having none of it. He said this earlier today. He said, Justin is going to have his time, and Justin's going to have a great career, but right now it's my time. So my focus is on being the best player I can be for this team and helping this team win. I don't think fans will love that. I'm curious. Dalton, I believe, is the starter. Which one should it be? Do you stick with the veteran, or should they just let Fields out there right away?
Well, I think that if Fields is great and and he's executing everything that Nagy wants him to do, then start him. A guy I really respect, you should all follow him, is Andrew Brandt, former GM of the Packers.
Oh, yeah.
And he said every one of these quarterbacks that are taken with the first pick, they're all going to start. He said, well, you know, you talk about you don't want to endure growing pains. Well, whenever they go in, there's going to be growing pains. So start it right away.
Yeah, there's no more, you know, let's take a 2-3 year approach. These guys got to go in and they got to play. And Dalton, I think, is there just like he was there in Dallas, just in case. Just like Fitzpatrick was there in Miami, kind of just, you know, help him along. But let's get this kid to play. Remember, you got to make these decisions in 3 years to pay them. Why are you throwing a year away? Now, if you're a Giant fan, you probably hope Fields plays, right? Because then that might mean a better first-round pick for you next year. Because I think Dalton will probably have a better record. But I think Fields has got to play.
By the way, sack fly. Mets have tied it 1-1 in the ninth.
Wow.
So runner on first, one out, and that game is tied. Let's see. Fascinating conversation on Bleacher Report that I saw between Draymond Green and Kevin Durant. So I haven't seen the whole thing yet. I'm really curious to watch this because the couple clips that I've seen are fascinating. Oftentimes, the fight between Durant and Draymond is kind of looked upon as the signature moment that broke up a dynasty that might have been able to win at least a few more championships in Golden State, but they seem really close now. Here's a clip from it. They're talking basically about that incident, the fight between those two in L.A. against the Clippers.
So just for my own personal sanity, how much did our argument against the Clippers drive you to ultimately lead the Warriors?
It wasn't the argument. It was the way that everybody, Steve Kerr, act like it didn't happen. Bob Myers and tried to just discipline you and think that that would put the mask over everything. I really felt like that was such a big situation for us as a group. The first time we went through something like that, we had to get that all out. I remember watching The Last Dance, and when Scotty didn't go into the game, the whole team in the locker room said, Scotty, that was up that you did that. We needed that. We just needed to throw all of that on the table and say, yo, Dre, okay, like, that was up that we even had to go through that. Let's just wipe our hands with that and go finish the task. I don't think we did that. We tried to dance around it. I just didn't like how all of that, just the vibe between all of that, it just made weird to me. And I'd rather us be who we say we are, family first. Communication is key. Like, we didn't show that, and that's what rubbed me the wrong way more than anything.
So it did have everything to do with him leaving.
Yeah, I kind of don't love that. Like, it was a fight between those two, but he's kind of putting it on Steve Kerr and Bob Myers as the reason that it went wrong. Like,
right.
it was left, okay, we're going to do this messed up thing that's going to ruin team chemistry and all that, but you guys need to fix this. I mean, I don't know. Something about that kind of seems like passing the buck.
Because what, did you need their permission to iron it out? Could you have just ironed it out on your own?
Right, like, exactly.
You needed Steve Kerr to sit down and tell you guys got to work it out? It seems a little fabricated to me.
Yeah, I don't know. That was kind of how I thought of it as well. And that will do it for ENN Tonight, which is brought to you by Deep Eddy Vodka. Deep Eddy Vodka is 10 times distilled and made in small batches. Taste the difference for yourself. Please day drink responsibly.
Well, I think it's been a fun show.
A lot of fun.
A lot of things we covered. Aliens, Stonehenge, Studio 54, Area 51.
JFK, a lot of stuff.
Don and Chris will do the show tomorrow, and Chris Carlin's coming out in just a moment. The words of Billy Joel, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. I'm afraid it's time for goodbye again. See ya, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.